This is KO4HX, now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. With our thanks for check-ins, we will now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 73s, good nights, and Happy New Year to everyone.
JBQ, KI4LZI. JBQ, KI4LZI. My story be gone already.
Andy, I was hoping to catch him too and carry on that conversation a little bit more about his family. And I couldn't remember if that was his granddad or his mom's dad that had done the 24 kids.
KI4LZI, I didn't hear the whole thing that you and he was talking about. Me and Ed was on another repeater talking. But we came over here to check into this here about his antenna situation down there, and I was just going to say that he heard it. Wanted to know if he had heard it all, but he ain't there to hear it. Well, not verified he heard it, but I didn't hear all that y'all were talking about, just some of it.
And I tried to get in on that, I think it was the Anderson net, the 146790, isn't it?
146790, tone 127.3.
I can hear that repeater as good as I can hear this one from up here where I'm at. Maybe a little better. But right as I keyed up, I got everything squared away with the radio to get over there. He was closing the net out.
And Ed carrying on there for a little bit afterwards. That's where we left from to come over here to check in.
Sir, I moved back over here so I could get ready and prepared for calling the net tonight. I hate to feel like I'm rushed, so I like to get in here and prepare for at least about 30 minutes ahead of time and get my mind in the right space to do this.
Well, I forgot about you being net control. I forgot about that, but that's where me and Ed was at earlier before we come back here and checked in, was on that repeater you're talking about. That KL7FO that does that on Sunday night, he's been doing that. Lord, I guess I'd had my tech license 2 or 3 years when he started doing that on 7-9. He's a very informative ham when it comes to emergency communications and all like that, and Ed brought that announcement over on that net about what he was mentioned here a while ago about, and he and I got to talking about generator issues, and I got to thinking about Larry's down there, JBQ's antenna situation down there, where he can't have much of an antenna, and it reminded me of that, and I hope he heard it all anyway, because he needs to support that all he can.
We'll need to jump in there and support that, even if it doesn't affect us, because we need to keep all of our rights and freedoms that we have now. Don't give up any more of them, that's for sure.
Larry, JBQ there, that legislation is just prime for his situation where he can't have more lives and those kind of setup that he's in, and that's this legislation will go right along to helping Larry out.
Help a lot of people out. I thought the ARRL had already done something where they would come in and help you fight that. HOA saying you couldn't have an antenna up.
For ARRL, since I get QST, and I've been getting things about it, but my issue is here when it comes to where I'm at, don't involve anything like that. Matter of fact, certainly here on this band, VHF, UHF, it's not necessarily their fault that I'm in a bad location. And the other issue with HF ain't necessarily, it's just the power lines are in the wrong place. And I can't afford to pay the power company to change the power lines.
Thank you.
Brace, you sound like me. I got a mountain behind me between me and the repeater, and I got power lines running right up my driveway, so it affects my antennas that way. So I have to run parallel with the mountain to do anything, and it's not the best of situations, but I make the best of what I can do here. So I know what you're talking about, Andy.
Well, see, in the location I'm at, if it's on this mountain we're on, what this repeater is here, Sasquatch Mountain, a glacier mountain, on VHF, no problem. No problem at all. But any other place, don't tell them we've been able to get into it. But the power line issue is where it tears me up on HF, because I can't put anything up here, dipole-wise, without it being under this power line that comes up the valley. And that thing over the past 40 years has came down twice. And had I had something up at the time that the wire wasn't insulated, it would have probably come in here and burned this house down. And the rest of the family don't approve of my hobby in that much of a manner. And some people suggested I put up a vertical. Well, the only problem about HF verticals is if you have them too close to power line, they're notoriously bad about what I've been understood picking up power line noise. And when you spend big money to buy an HF vertical for all bands, you do that and you load it up with power line noise, you kind of sunk steel.
KN4TFW, Ken, he switched from a Carolina Wyndham over to verticals at his place, and he's in an HOA, and he loves them. He's raving about them all the time, about how well they're doing. He's actually doing better with them than he did with his Wyndham.
I've heard people say that, but if I'm going to put a number of $100 down, I want to be sure I don't have that issue.
You could get just one and try it first, you know, maybe 40 or 20 or 80, whichever you wanted, and try it instead of investing a whole bunch of money in all of them and just try one of them to start with and play a little by little and see what happens.
But I do hear on FM here. You know, this vertical tri-bander I got, Diamond, here ain't that far from this power line. It don't do FM that way, but FM is different than what it is down there, though. So, in a sense, I'm already doing that. It's trying to find the right balance that's affordable. That's where I run into my problems, because this is the main power line that comes up this holler here.
That I'm using a center fed dipole, and I got it running parallel with the power lines instead of running under them. I just got it running parallel beside them. But I got it in an inverted V configuration the best I could. It's not perfect, but it does all right for what I do. I don't do a whole lot of HF though. But I can get on 80 meters, and I can make contacts around here locally. And I've made 10-meter contacts to Syracuse, New York, and a couple other places on it. So it does all right. And so, I mean, you can try that.
Well, that's what I've had here in the past when I have had it up. But it was always under this power line. It's center fade.
I didn't run mine under the power lines. I run it parallel to them about, I don't know, maybe at no more than 60 feet away from them, but running parallel to them.
Feed point is, the power line ain't far from the feed point here where this power line is, so every which way I go, one leg of it's going to be under it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's all I got with my limited experience. Maybe there's somebody else there. I was hoping Larry would come back in here trying to keep the conversation going a little bit until maybe he heard and come back in here.
BD8RON. printout that I got off the web about a ham radio. It's on the DX Zone ham radio. I don't have the exact site, but it's got a list of ham radio links, and one of them is how to be a net control operator. If you clicked on this, it would go to it, but I think if you did a search for how to be a net control operator, this is a great way to provide a public service and maintain your skill as an operator is to be a net control station. Being net control is rewarding and not overly difficult. That's the only reference I have to it. You might want to do a search on it and see if that's of value to you. Over.
Got out, Ed. That's one of the reasons I got into it is so that I would be more comfortable with calling the net if something did go wrong in an emergency situation. It's a lot better to practice here where it's just, you know, laugh and move on and I made a mistake and correct it and go on than in the middle of an emergency to do something like that. So a lot better to hone your skills here. But, yeah, I'll have to check that out. And I have done a little bit of research on YouTube and different things, you know, but I found the best thing for it is to listen to the other net controls and then get put in the hot seat and trial by fire.
Is have a tape recorder or whatever recorder you have just to record the whole session, to go back through that and listen to what's going on from both sides. And remember, the title is Net Control, Control Station. You control what's going on. So if the people are talking too fast, just say, hey, guys, slow down. I can't copy your call signs when you're going W8RON, which is what I hear a lot on the HF DX stations, and have to listen three or four times. And the other stations have to listen too. The same way with POTA. They don't give the call signs frequently enough, and then they rush through them. Over.
And that's the key. You are net control. You are in control of it. And maintaining control is an important part of it. So that's the main thing to do. But go ahead, Andy.
Tells the guy, one thing about it, you do it long enough, being a net control, you learn people's voices real, real well. The ones that frequent and regular here, you hear the voice, you'll know the call sign in time. You'll know it, you know, without even hardly thinking. You do it long enough.
Ed called and said he had a comment or check in. I can't remember what he said there, but I already knew it was him. And when he come back, I come back to him to check in, I already had his call sign typed in up there. So, yeah, it's exactly what happens. You just get to know him.
A lot of other things, you know. The longer you do it, the better you get it. I wish y'all would have been here when K4SUG Ray Allison was still alive. He used to be the net manager on this net here prior to about, I guess, 11 or 12 years ago. His normal night was on Thursday night before WG4MC picked it up. He was the net control on Thursday, the net manager for this net for about 20. Let's see, he become the net manager sometime in the late 90s when Charles Muller, next Muller, K4TOY, passed away. He become the net manager then, and about 10, 11 years ago, Robert Webster had to pick it up for Ray because he had heart issues, and then, of course, you know that, I think, from there on, but he was a world of experience in this hobby and also about nets. I just wish you had been here at the time to meet him.
Pat, do you use Excel? Over.
Dave has wrote a program for doing the net control, and that's what I use to do it. And it's great. Once you get everything figured out and learn how to use it all, it's great. Like when I put your call sign in, and I hit F1, it automatically fills it over here and puts it in there, and I hit F5 and save it, and it puts it in the log.
But I was going to suggest that because the nets are fairly consistent, and the reason I said Excel, because you can sort things on it, but if you have a list of the stations organized by the last or by the suffix characters in alphabetical order, as they check in, you don't have to type anything. You just check them off as they check in, and then you can read them back. And you would have that information next to each call sign, like the place and the name. But that way, you don't have to write anything as far as a computer until later on when you've got time. So you just check them off as they check in. And since they're basically going to be organized by suffix with what half a dozen in each one, it would make it easier perhaps than typing stuff in. Over.
It all boils down to what you get used to, and I don't know how. I've never really learned to use Excel anywhere near its potential, so I'd have to just learn it just like I'm learning this, so I don't know if that'd be any quicker for me or not.
One way of doing it, but you don't have to use Excel. You could do it by hand. It would take you a little bit of time to organize it, maybe, but if you just make a couple of columns, one with one with the prefix and the number, and then on the other side, in the next column, the suffixes, and organize those suffixes by groups, by alphabet. You'd have to play with it a little bit, but once you've got that, you just check off the call signs as they check in, and you don't have to write down anything. And it's all the information is there. You just check them off as they check in. Over.
Looks like it would work, but like I said, I had to learn to use either one of them. So I'm just doing the best I can with the program. This is the program that most everybody uses, I think, except for Gary. I think Gary still does his by hand, or I know Gary does, but I don't know if anybody else does. Still does them by hand. And when I send my net, it's got a place to send net report over there. It monitors EchoLink, keeps track of where I'm at in the alphabet, pre-net check-ins. I can look up your call sign in the SEC database, QRZ, or my own history. It's a great system. It's just learning all the little ins and outs of how it works.
Hear that, over.
To W4DJW, Dave, about that. He is the one that wrote it, and he sent it to me or all that, so you'd have to get with him on that one.
He's the current net manager here. He pretty much is also the one that put EchoLink on this machine about 12 or 15 years ago. KI4LCI.
Sounds like a neat program. I've been playing with some of the programs on HF, log for OM and stuff like that. Still haven't found one I really like. Over.
It's for net control. It's not for anything else, but it's great for doing net control. But as far as logging your contacts all together, I don't know if it would do that or not. You'd have to talk with him about that. But it does keep a history of every day that I do it and a database that people that have checked in with me. And I can go look and see how many times you've checked in with me and when and the first time and all that. So I can go back and look at all that information.
I would just like to have it for my reference as a potential net control station to see how it works. So
you catch him on here, he'll be glad to share it with you and get you set up with it. Took a little bit to get it set up and get it all working because Microsoft didn't want to recognize it, didn't want to let you download it because it's an executable file, something about the firewall, I don't know. But anyway, he helped me get it all set up and working, so it's working now and it's great.
Things like that anyway. I use Excel because I used to use it when I was working. and got to be fairly good with it, but I haven't used it that much lately, so I play with it every once in a while to try to remember how to do things. And then I know it'll do something and can't remember how to do it. Over.
Don't use it, you lose it. But go ahead and pick it up, Andy.
Can y'all go ahead and talk about the computer part of it? Dave brought a lot of this to the repeater. He did now. The one I was talking about who's been Ray Allison, he was one of the primary members of this club. He was. Of the Blue Age Amateur Radio Society, dating back to the late 50s. WD4DYH, John's father, who passed away about a year and a half so ago, something like that. He mainly done it the old-fashioned way, but, you know, back in the days before there was... Matter of fact, I remember back in the late 70s, early 80s, this is before the ARRL website existed. Ray used to bring the W18W bulletin due to this 2-meter net as an announcement back in those days. So I date way back. KI4LCI.
4HX. I never met Ray Allison, and, I heard a lot about him, and I met Johnny several times, but I appreciate all the work he put into it and brought it to where it's at. If not, we wouldn't be here carrying on the conversation tonight without the men that put all the work in before us.
Let's see, I don't remember way, way back, because I couldn't talk on you in my life completely, but there was one... trustee for the repeater, he was WB4ZQJ. He dated back, I think, back to probably the late 70s. He passed away, and then K4SUG became the repeater trustee. And, of course, he got some age on him, and he passed away about a year and a half ago, but he had pretty much turned it all over to Johnny and Dave, DJ Dub, and some of them probably 4 or 5 years earlier than that, but a lot of those elders were ones that put this repeater, as you say, on the air back in 73, but Ray used to bring the bulletins that you now read on the ARRL website of W1AW. He used to bring it personally. Ray did to this 2-meter net in the late 70s, early 80s, because the internet didn't yet exist for ARRL at that time.
What the net's for is to share information and bring us all together to keep us informed about what's going on. So that's a good way to do it. And the more people bring comments and traffic in, the better the nets will be. And I'm guilty. I get busy and I just check in and then I got to go because I got other things to listening. But I need to be more active in commenting and getting that part of it.
Go ahead, Ed. I don't mean to monopolize. Go ahead.
I'm picking up stuff. I'm working on trying to download a program at the same time. I took a class on WinLink, and now I'm trying to download the stuff to a new computer to see if I can make it actually work. Over.
Reason I know some of this stuff, like I was told you before, Patrick, I've been listening to this repeater for ever and a day back, way back before I ever had a license. That's how I picked up on some of this stuff. No one else, if I hadn't listened way back, would have known all this.
I'm glad you did. You're a wealth of knowledge, I can tell you that much, with the repeaters and the tones and where they're at and all that information. I don't see how you keep it all straight. But I'm glad you do. I know if I ever needed any information on something like that, I know who to get a hold of.
Well, like I told you, I didn't always have a license myself, but prior to 05, late 05, I didn't have a license, but I was listening on and off ever since Christmas of 1976, primarily on this repeater we're on right here.
For HKX. Well, Andy, you've been listening to this repeater almost as long as I've been alive. I was born May of 75, so I'm sure you got a lot of knowledge about what's happened and what's going on here.
It used to be here that's long dead now, and some instances, but way, way back, this used to be the Sky One repeater, too, way, way, way back. And I heard a lot of situations happening with the weather that I heard communications on here about way back. Like that dam down there in Tocoa Falls, somewhere down in there that collapsed. Well, back during that time, this was the Sky One repeater, and there was a lot of communications on here back at that time about that.
I can barely hear the Sky One repeater from my location here now. I struggle to hear it at all, but I don't know. It's just right up on the ridge on the other side of me, but I'm like, struggle to get into it.
You're out driving, delivering tools, and doing what you do for a living, and any bad weather comes up, odds are you'll be able to get it out from up there anyway. Say, like in summertime, and there's good to be a bad thunderstorm somewhere, or tornado, or something come out, tune the 145.47, tone 91.5.
Got it programmed in my radios, but even up here in the Transylvania County, where I'm at, I can't get into it. I don't know if Ed's having any better luck or not, but it's like there's a black hole up here that just sucks all the radio waves out of the air.
Thinking about getting into
them. It's up above this, and they don't have the altitude that this one has, though. 145.47, tone 91.5, I believe. I heard them say that tire's about 125 foot, I think, what I heard. It's just slightly uphill above this one, but it don't have the same altitude.
Give me a few minutes and I'll check it out. 147, what was the other, 45, over?
Negative. 145.470, tone 91.5.
5 minutes out.
Well, as the repeater up there at 47 currently stands right now, I can go out here out back and get into it with an HC for my location now, with a half a watt, but it's still, the tire that it's on isn't as high as that. These folded dipoles that this repeater here uses is up on that 1,000-foot tire. And they're up at about the 450-foot level on that 1,000-foot tower. Where the other one that's a little bit further up the hill is only 125-foot tire at top. So, and the antenna's on it, but it's not going to have, you know, quite the same punch always. Well, go ahead.
Hey, name's Steve, KR8MR. I know tomorrow, they're supposed to start tomorrow morning. You have some nasty weather already over in Texas, Arkansas, and like four-state area over there. I guess that's what's going to cause our rain on Tuesday. So it makes you wonder how bad it's going to get here on Tuesday.
Well, up to this point, I can't say myself. This is one of these things we just got to keep tabs on. I really don't know, but if something was to get severe, that would be the place to go, 145.47, tone 91.5.
If I can get to that repeater, and it's real strong where I'm at up here in North. I'm in Taylor's, but I'm up north, like Blue Ridge area. Blue Ridge or Sandy Flat. I don't know, I never could figure out what to call it where I live, but it ain't Taylor's.
But, Tom, that's the Sky One repeater, and if there's any bad report anything. Go ahead, oh boy. You know who I'm talking about, even though I forgot your name. The drives the tow truck.
KO4HKX. It's all right, Andy. It's Patrick. Is it Steve? Am I who I'm talking to?
QSL, Steve Kramer, KRA tomorrow.
Okay, I thought it was, but I wanted to make sure. So you're up around Sandy Flats in that area, next to the rock quarry?
Not too far from here. I go by there on the way to Mountain View Elementary with the kids. So, yeah, I like to get a hamburger or two at Sandy Flat when I can.
I'll eat breakfast in there. I used to one day a week on my tour route. I travel up 290 and up 25 and 414. I'm all around you right there where you're at in the tool truck.
Yeah, I won't be doing that, but I am looking for a part-time. I just recently got on, I'm on disability with Social Security and I'm retired now. But I'm not so disabled that I can't still work, you know, and do some things. My vision is the main problem.
Hear that, and I hope everything goes good for you there, and you get something. Surely somebody can find something for you to do. As many people are needing help nowadays.
Cliff knows that he comes in for health reasons. He shows up at her office every now and then, and his job is going up, and he used to take a new car somewhere to another dealer and bring one back that somebody wanted to, you know, bring from another dealer. And so he was swapping cars. It used to be new cars. Now he's doing used cars that way. But that's his job, is just to take a car somewhere and swap it out for another car and bring it back. Sounds like a good job to me.
After that, we called those DT drivers when I was turning wrenches before the tool truck. Yeah, that was a pretty good gig, just ride around in the air conditioner heat, back and forth or whatever.
Before.
To be honest with you, delivery, transport, I don't know. Just what we always call them, or always heard them called, was DT drivers.
Yeah, I know if you're an alcoholic, they got a thing they call the DTs or something, I remember from high school. You don't hear that much anymore. The deliriums, tremens, or some kind of thing like that. It's one of them stupid acronyms that I happen to remember from back in the 70s.
Go ahead, Andy. I don't want to leave you out.
KI4LCI. Well, I couldn't add much to that. That's, from my understanding, I always heard them called parts and delivery people. Every now and then I'll see trucks like it going to these various dealerships where it's, well, what I understood them to be called parts and delivery people anyway.
Yeah, well, parts and deliveries were guys delivering parts, but we called those drivers that went after new cars or used cars DT drivers. And like I said, I never bothered to ask why. Didn't have much to do with them, honestly, unless they tore something up in the process, which I did have a couple of those. Had one in 2003, when the 6 liters come out, there was one delivering a truck from another dealership, and he made it 125 miles down the road, and he toasted the whole truck because he wasn't paying attention to the gauges. A hose clamp broke, and spit all the coolant out, and he burnt the engine to the ground. When I put an engine in that thing, every piece of plastic on it was melted. It was liquid, and it stunk up the whole shop when I changed that engine. That's the hottest thing I've ever seen. I mean, I like to never got the torque converter bolts off because they were so hot. Ended up having to put an engine and trans in it because it just cooked everything.
What's with the clamp? Sound like, don't it?
Reaper Beetle was my dad's car, and every time I'd take it across the river from Cincinnati over to northern Kentucky to let him work on it, you remember them things are air-cooled, And there's some air hoses that were, like paper hoses that were on either side of the engine that go on with hose clamps. And them guys, they'd always put the hoses back on, but I guess to save time, they never tightened up the clamps. Now, I think more than once I've had to take it back. And my dad, as soon as he got home from work, he'd look at the trunk and lift the lid on that thing, and the hose clamps were loose. And he'd send me back with it the next day and say, hey, you guys need to put these things back together all the way, not part of the way. And so I got to the point where in order to save me a trip, I used to have to lift the lid on the thing before I took it home to see if they put the clamps back on, and they almost never did. You had to go back and ask them to.
A few times that they learned, this guy's going to check that. Let's put them on and be done with it. But I don't know. People just get in a hurry, and it's nothing new. They don't take pride in their work, and it's just run through it. How quick can I get this job done, and how much money can I make? There's no pride in it anymore.
Everything anymore, I think, except the medical profession. I think that, you know, I don't think they like being rushed, but I think the insurance companies are really pushing them hard and to get done within a certain number of minutes or whatever. But I know most nurses and doctors, the ones I run into anyway, they don't seem like they really want to mess with that computer ever.
And most mechanics are the same way. I don't know if you know anything about how their pay system works, but most of us worked on flat rate. If this job paid an hour to get it done, if I can get it done in a half hour or anything under an hour, I still got paid that hour. But if it took me 2 hours, I only got paid that hour also. And what's happened is the manufacturers have been cutting to save money. They cut the labor times on everything to where you can't get it done in that time frame, much less beat it. And that's cut technicians' pay down to where now they're having to do things they wouldn't normally do to feed their families. And it's so expensive to be in that field. What most people don't realize is most of those technicians are buying their own tools, and that stuff is not cheap. It's not like going down here to Harbor Freight or Lowe's or Home Depot or any of those places and buying tools. When you start buying professional tools, they are a lot more expensive.
A special set of tools, like on a Ford Exploder, just to, I'm sorry, I went out of turn. I know you need special tools just to do the water pump on a Ford Explorer. And I had a mechanic pass on that one time. He says, you need to take that to the dealer because they spent the money on the tools. And I know if I spent that kind of money on the tools, he said I'd never get my money back.
That's just like me wanting to refix an old 72 Ford Pinto. First car I had, but pretty much. But things are simple, but the parts ain't as easy to come by as they was when the thing was new. Go ahead, Patrick.
That 72 Pinto, it's getting hard to find parts for that thing. Everybody's turned them into dirt cars. Or, you know, racing them in the four-cylinder classes. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just getting hard to do anything anymore without being underhanded or doing things you wouldn't normally do. And customer service is a thing of the past anymore. I mean, here for long, Walmart's going to have us unloading the trucks and putting it on the shelf, along with checking ourselves out the way they're going.
What that self-checkout business is all about, what you're doing it yourself. KI4LZI5ID.
They were doing it Procter & Gamble when I worked for them for a while. We had a project called Drools. Display Ready Unit Loads is what that stood for. And what you do is you'd enter a formula for, or like a recipe for what kind of soap you wanted, and so you'd have all these different kinds of soap, and the machine would line them all up on the conveyor in the order that you specify, and then it would palletize this stuff in that order, so that all they had to do was bring the pallet out into the middle of a place like a Sam's or a Costco, and
you could pretty much get at any of the four or five, and it kept them from stocking shelves.
And that, and with now where you can get everything delivered to your house right from your computer, brick-and-mortar stores are having a hard time competing with that because it costs to have that overhead and the employees and power and all that stuff. It costs to do that. And with my business, I know I'm feeling it. I take the time to come by every week and service your tools if you got anything broken or need anything or, you know, that stuff. And, you know, allowing you to make payments on the tools that you're purchasing, it takes, that customer service is long gone because people don't want to pay for it anymore. They'd rather buy it from Amazon and it break, and then, you know, they'll fuss and whine and complain when they can't get it done, but they, you know, they'll order another one. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but it can't be what we're doing right now.
Cost doing right now, is it like the gasoline right now down, or is it still pretty steep?
Still, last diesel I bought for tool truck, I've been off all this past week, was 420, but I bought diesel for my excursion down there this week when I went shopping, and it was 406, I believe it was. So it's come down a little bit, but it's still high.
I'm gonna go back in the kitchen. I got something I'm gonna stick in the oven, and I think it's up to temperature now. And thanks for letting me bump in on your QSO. Take care, Patrick and Andy. Bye bye.
Talk to you tonight, and come back anytime. Cable 4 HKX, and Andy, I'm gonna have to get out of here myself and get ready to call tonight. Good to talk to you, and if you hear Ed, tell him I said 73s, and I'll talk to him on down the log. You be careful and have a happy new year, KO4HKX, and I'll be clear on your final.
Yeah, we'll talk to you later, Steve. I can't, unless I talk to you a lot, and even in this battery finds, I still sometimes forget. When it comes to this energy business, I still don't think, as long as this administration stays up there, we've seen the end of it yet when it comes to these energy issues. We're still not done with KI4LZI.